Historian, entrepreneur, and author Itai Tenenbaum is your guide for a behind-the-scenes tour of Israeli society and objective analysis of the key issues of the day for anyone who wants a deep and authentic look inside Israel.
My name is Itai Tenenbaum. I am both an Israeli and an American. Born in Tel Aviv, moved to the United States at the age of 11, and lived in the Washington, D.C. area. At 18, I returned to Israel, served in the Israeli Defense Forces mainly as a tank commander. I participated in the First Lebanon War in the 1980s and for years inside Gaza in my month-a-year reserve duty. I run boutique tours to Israel and, of course, this podcast, Inside Israel. On April 14, Israel and its allies made history. Apologies if I sound overdramatic, but the Israeli Defense Air Systems went up against the largest barrage of missiles and unmanned aerial vehicles, or UAVs for short, faced by any country at one time. Just to comprehend the unprecedented numbers, 185 Shahad 238 unmanned aerial vehicle took off from Iran and from some of the proxies of Iran, targeting a couple of Israeli Air Force bases. None of them penetrated the borders of Israel. 36 cruise missiles took off from Iran and from some of the proxies of Iran. None of them penetrated the borders of Israel. 120 ballistic missiles took off from Iran. Only 4 penetrated Israeli territory, and only 2 exploded. Minor damage was caused to the Nevatim Air Force Base in the Negev Desert. No one was hurt, and the base remained operational. So again, this was a historic achievement of the Israeli air defense systems in the face of the largest barrage of missiles and UAVs that any country has ever faced at one time. Roughly 70 of the UAVs were intercepted and shot down by the American and British jet fighters. Israeli fighter jets intercepted and shot down the rest of the UAVs, around 115. All were shot down outside of Israel's borders. The amazing achievement is the success of the fighter jets in intercepting such a large number of UAVs. Swarms of UAVs, in fact. The UAVs, named Shahad 238, are of suicide bomber types. Each one carries up to 50 kilos of explosives. That's about 110 pounds. Their mission is to dive into their target, exploding as they hit it. These Shahad 238s are improved models of the Shahad 136, which Russia uses almost every day against Ukraine. The 238s are faster, they are stronger, and are designed to be more lethal than those used by the Russians. UAVs are small and slow aircrafts. Due to their small size, they are very difficult to locate. It is difficult for a fighter plane to both detect and lock a missile on them. The American-made F-35 jets, in Hebrew called Adir, have a special radar that is also adapted to detect the UAVs and shoot missiles at them. Since the F-35 fighter jets are configured with a stealth configuration that is to be invisible to enemy's radars, they carry a limited number of missiles, so it's very likely that the incoming UAVs were shot down not just by missiles, but also by the fighter jets' cannons. An even greater challenge was interception of the 36 cruise missiles. The reason is that these missiles have zero radar signature, or in other words, they are not detectable by radar. They are called FAWA 351, a long-range jet cruise missile, heavier and faster than the Shahad 238 that Iran unveiled just last year. The Hawa reaches a range of about 1,650 kilometers, that's 1,000 miles, and cruises at a speed of about 800 kilometers or 500 miles per hour. As mentioned, these missiles have zero radar signature, and yet they too were all destroyed before reaching the borders of Israel. More than likely, most of them were shot down by an Israeli air defense system called David Sling, as well as jet fighters. Here too, American Air Force shot down some of them, about 4 of the missiles, while the Israeli Air Force took care of the remaining 32 cruise missiles. Perhaps the greatest challenge was shooting down the Iranian ballistic missile called Imad. These are new Iranian ballistic missiles, only about a year old. They are the Iranian best missiles. As a matter of fact, it is designed as a maneuvering missile. Now, what does that mean? Well, as ballistic missiles do, its main path is outside the Earth's atmosphere. But once it enters back into the Earth's atmosphere, It has the capability of maneuvering in order to avoid radar detection and or interceptor missiles. The Imad missile has a range of about 1,700 kilometers, just over 1,050 miles. It is powered by liquid fuel, and its warhead can carry up to 750 kilograms of explosive. That's almost 1,700 pounds of explosives. Together with the Imad missiles, the Iranians also launched the heavier Khan ballistic missiles. So altogether, around 350 unmanned aerial vehicles and missiles were launched at Israel. As said, two missiles hit, causing minor damage. Unfortunately, a 7-year-old Bedouin girl was injured badly in her head from a piece of the interceptor missile after it hit an incoming Iranian missile and fragments of it rained down. The girl's in the hospital and will hopefully recover soon. Just to comprehend and compare, the Iranian attack on Saudi Arabia oil facilities in 2019 included 17 unmanned aerial vehicles and 4 cruise missiles. They hit their target and paralyzed 50% of the Saudi oil production. So, why was Israel so successful? Israel has one of the best air defense systems in the world. Actually, the best in the world together with the United States. These systems are designed to shoot down rockets, cruise missiles, and ballistic missiles. The Israeli system consists of 4 layers of defense. The first layer of defense is the Iron Dome. The Iron Dome is the world's first missile defense system, which is a mobile system, also designed to shoot down short-range rockets and UAVs. The second layer of defense is David's Sling. It is an innovative defensive solution for shooting down larger caliber rockets and short-range ballistic missiles. The system is designed to strike the target head-on, exploding it. The third layer of defense is the Arrow 2. The Arrow 2 detects, tracks, intercepts, and destroys incoming tactical ballistic missiles carrying a range of warheads. The Arrow 2 is effective within Earth's atmosphere. And the fourth layer of defense is the Arrow 3. The Arrow 3 system serves as the top layer of Israel's defense array. Its interceptor is a world-class missile that, together with the Arrow 2, significantly expands the state of Israel's defense capabilities. The Arrow 3 enables longer range, higher altitude, and more precise ballistic missile engagements. The Arrow 3 defense missile shoots down the incoming ballistic missiles outside of Earth's atmosphere by hitting the target head-on. In short, the Arrow 3 is assigned to shoot down ballistic missiles in space. Lieutenant Colonel Frankel, an officer in the Interception Management Center of the Israel Defense Forces, spoke to the Israeli media and said, as Iran's missiles approached, "There was complete silence. Everyone functioned exactly according to their training. Composure, professionalism, and again, complete silence. Everyone understood the magnitude of the responsibility that lay upon their shoulders and what might happen if we did not succeed in our mission." Major A, also an officer in the Interception Management Center of the Israel Defense Forces, added, "The picture in the sky was very complex. We saw many objects on our screens. Each of them were surface-to-surface ballistic missiles moving towards the state of Israel. The scenario is complex. No system or country in the world has ever faced such a barrage." Lieutenant Colonel Frankel concluded, "We are all proud of the results, but we are focused on preparing for future scenarios. We understand that more threats could be launched at us at any moment. Our role is to always be ready, and we are. We will continue to be on high alert." Now, I just want to add that there are reports that many of the Iranian missiles malfunctioned while still over Iranian territory. If true, was this due to poor Iranian technology, or perhaps electronic warfare that caused them to fail? The answer to that will remain unknown, at least in the near future. Iran's massive attack on Israel can be titled only as an Iranian defeat. That is not to say they won't be successful next time. And so Israel remains on high alert. But their defeat didn't stop the Iranian regime from declaring victory. They needed an immediate success story to cover up for their immense failure. So they posted a photo of a fire from Venezuela, claiming it was their strike on Israel. The media first reported wrongly that the photo was a fire in Texas. They also posted photos from the Russian-Ukrainian war and claimed these were targets in Israel. Iranian crowds made their way to Palestine Square in Tehran, waving Palestinian flags and celebrated. The Iranian parliament also celebrated the attack, chanting, "Death to Israel." But most Iranians exposed to social media are well aware of the reality. Having said all of that, Iran did have some success. First of all, Israel and the United States failed to deter Iran from attacking. This despite the public warning of both Israel and the United States, primarily President Joe Biden using his famous word, don't, on the eve of the attack. Second, Iran managed to create a precedent of massive firing from its sovereign territory directly at the State of Israel. This is an event we have not been in since the Gulf War, when Saddam Hussein, the president of the sovereign state of Iraq, attacked Israel. The Iranian attack differed since it was a massive attack while trying to create a new equation for any future Israeli action, such as the assassination attributed to Israel in Damascus, Syria, of senior Iranian Revolutionary Guard officers. This is an equation that Israel cannot accept. And yet, their technology failure is great. The last time such odds were displayed was 42 years ago in the summer of 1982. It was then that Israeli pilots flying American-made fighter jets shot down 87 Soviet-made jet fighters flown by Syrian pilots over the skies of Lebanon in less than 2 days. It was then that the Soviets understood how inferior they were to American technology. Unless Iran is totally oblivious, and they are not, they realize their inferiority. Now, please don't misunderstand me when I say that Iran suffered a defeat and that their technology is inferior. I am not insinuating in any way that Iran's failure puts us, Israel, in the clear or that we are in good shape. The last thing we want or need is a prolonged war with Iran with dozens or even hundreds of missiles flying across the Middle East on a daily basis. Such a scenario will definitely weaken Iran, mostly economically, but the Iranian regime will gain more power for two main reasons. One, any Iranian civil unrest during a war will be considered betrayal. The Iranian regime has proven, on several occasions, their cruelty to anyone who threatens the regime. And two, as almost always, an outside enemy unites and not divides. A scenario of an all-out war will also weaken Israel on many levels, including economically and socially. Israel must ask itself, what is our end game? What is our main goal in this multiple front war? Israel needs to ask itself how we come away from this war strengthened and with a stronger deterrence. How do we come away from this war feared by our enemies? I shall address these questions in just a couple of minutes. So, the Iranian attack physically failed, but it created a new reality in the Middle East. Again, firing a barrage of roughly 350 UAVs and missiles is no less than a declaration of war. But the Iranians also had political failures. Now think about it. When did Arab Sunni Muslim states like Saudi Arabia and Jordan stand up to defend the Jewish state? And it doesn't matter if they physically shot down the Iranian UAVs or just let Israel enter their airspace to do so. These countries stood up to Iran and put themselves on the side of Israel. By doing so, they also sent a message to Hamas, who would love an Iranian-Israel war, to perhaps bail them out. The Arab Sunni countries made clear what side they are on. Are we facing a changing Middle East? Personally, I very much hope so. Look, what you witnessed on the night of April 14th was a coalition of countries, Western Europeans, Arabs, and Jews, working together under the American umbrella with shared intelligence and shared goals. And the outcome was a great success. This is unprecedented. It is the first time in Israel's 75-year history that a coalition of countries were able to act together in such a unison. I remind you that Saudi Arabia doesn't even have diplomatic relations with Israel. Also, Israel's Western allies have been quarreling with Israel over Gaza. These nations, England, France, lately even Germany, and of course the United States, have been asking the Israeli government for months for a day-after plan for Gaza. The response from the current Israeli government has been none. Israel's Western allies want to see Hamas gone. They have made that clear. They are on our side, Israel's side. But they also want to see a plan for the future, which is actually much more so in Israeli interest. And yet, nothing. Well, the Iranian attack leading to the unprecedented cooperation of Western allies, the Sunni pragmatic states, and Israel, may present an opportunity to devise a plan for Gaza in which Hamas is gone as a political and military force. In other words, a similar cooperation for the future of Gaza. And this brings me to the question of how shall, or rather, how will, Israel react to the Iranian attack. The context here is clear. Israel has no choice but to react and harshly. If Israel does not react harshly, Iran and its allies, as well as other Arab states that are ready to normalize relations with Israel, will see this inaction as weakness. There's no room for even appearing weak in the Middle East. It is simply not an option if you long to survive in the Middle East. So how will Israel react? Obviously, that is kept at a very high level of secrecy. But here are some options presented publicly by leaders, experts, and others. We'll go from the lighter to the heavier options. One option is economic attack. Iran needs a lot of money for its military, as well as funding all its proxies like Hezbollah, Hamas, the Houthis, and many other Shia militias. Of course, it also needs money for running a large country with around 80 million people. The Iranian economy is failing miserably. If economic sanctions are imposed, as was the case in the past, it'll cause unrest in the country itself on the part of the citizens towards the government. Basically, instead of carrying out a physical and tactical attack that will cause limited damage, there's a possibility of collapsing the Iranian economy from the ground up. This is actually in the works. Second, or another option, is a cyber attack that shuts down seaports or other government institutions in Iran. This too has been done by Israel mainly as a reaction to the Iranian cyber attacks. An additional option is an attack on the Iranian bases and or military personnel in Syria, Lebanon, Iraq, and other countries. Israel has been doing this for a while, and this wouldn't be seen as a new tactic. Another option, a strike at bases that produce or store the unmanned aerial vehicles and missiles. Iran is prepared for this. They may have already hit their UAVs and missiles underground. Another option is a strike on the Iranian oil fields. This can cripple the Iranian economy, but will also raise world oil prices, not something that Israel wants to be responsible for. Another option is a strike on the Iranian nuclear facilities, which has been discussed for a long time. Iran is racing towards nuclear capability. This is dangerous, not only for Israel, but for the entire world. Iran has been saying for years that it wants to wipe Israel out, wants to wipe Israel off the face of the earth. Attacking the nuclear facility is legitimate and just, but will for sure cause an all-out war. Also, such an attack must be permitted by and in cooperation with the United States and other Western allies. Another option, and this one is an extreme one, dropping an electromagnetic bomb. An electromagnetic bomb has never been used before. The bomb is not lethal to humans, but it creates an electromagnetic pulse that can completely disable electrical and electronic systems within a very large range of impact. We're talking an impact of hundreds of miles. Once again, Iran's economy is poor, and this can cripple them for a long extended amount of time. But it will mainly influence civilian life, and it is very extreme. Not that firing 350 missiles and UAVs at Israel isn't extreme. Okay, before using any of these options against Iran, we Israel must ask ourselves the following questions, which I asked before. What is our endgame? How do we come away from this war strengthened and with a stronger deterrence? So, in the last 6 months, it has been made clear to Israel, beyond any doubt, that none of our enemies have really been convinced of the Israeli deterrence. Not Hamas on October 7th, not Hezbollah in the north, which has been firing on Israel for 6 months now, causing an evacuation of Israeli civilians, not the Houthis in Yemen, and no longer the Iranians as well. Moreover, the Iranians were also not convinced by President Biden, who bluntly warned Iran, echoing the famous statement that I said before, don't. The conclusions from this is that deterrence, unaccompanied by other additional actions, will fail at one point. So, before Israel takes any action, it must clarify the answer to the question of what we want to achieve. And the answer cannot just be renew our deterrence. Iran's strategy for years has been to build well-armed proxies surrounding Israel in order to strangle Israel. And so Israel must cripple those arms, in some cases amputate them, and in other cases blatantly cut them off. In the south, Israel's been able to dismantle most of Hamas's capability, not only taking away Hamas's power, but as a result also cutting off one of the Iranian arms. Much further south are the Houthis, based in Yemen, far from Israel, and hence much less of a worry. The Houthis are more of an annoyance to world sea traffic, and so world nations headed by the United States are dealing with them. In the east, Iran is attempting to penetrate Jordan and essentially topple the king. This is very worrisome. Jordan has made it clear where they stand. Israel and Jordan must cooperate and are cooperating with the help of the United States and other Western allies to thwart the Iranian attempt. In the Northeast, Israel has been working at cutting off the Iranian arm in Syria. We have had success in doing so and now must ramp it up to ensure severing that arm almost completely. Directly north of us is Israel's biggest challenge, and that is Hezbollah. They are the strongest arm of Iran, and so Israel must work at taking it away. Israel and Hezbollah are already at war, although it is more of a war of attrition. This may just be the right time to strike continuously and hard, and if need be, to get into a full war with Hezbollah. Israel needs to redefine the rules and chop away at the Hezbollah arm of Iran. Success on these fronts can be achieved. It'll be long, very difficult, and cost lives. But perhaps better now than waiting for these proxies and Iran to gain a lot more strength. Thank you for listening. Please share this and other episodes. This episode and all others can be listened to on all podcast media sources, such as Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Google, and more. It is also possible to listen on InsideIsrael.fm. The Inside Israel podcast needs your support. If willing, please log into InsideIsrael.fm and click on the Support Us button.